When we first started Vend Solutions, it was 2003. And to put it in perspective, when his dad came in to buy a computer, the only digital cameras we sold cost like $1,000. Auto Trader magazine was huge and autotrader.com was free. The listings were free. 8 years later, when we sold the company, Auto Trader magazine was gone and autotrader.com acquired us, was doing like $1 billion a year in revenue and online classifieds. So we existed in that time frame when that entire shift happened. All that money shifted to digital. And that's why companies like Vend Solutions and DealerQ, right, are so much more important today than back then when everything was print.
You're watching Q the Next Leader, presented by VinQ. I'm your host, Angela Rizzo. On today's episode, I'm being joined by co-host Danny Zaslavsky, co-founder and managing partner of VinQ, and also dealer principal of Country Hill Motors. Our guest today is Matt Watson, founder of Vend Solutions, Stackify, and Full Scale. Matt and Danny have a compelling history as two formidable innovators. Let's hear more.
Welcome, everyone, to Q the Next Leader. I'm Angela Rizzo, Chief Marketing Officer here at VendQ. I'm really excited today because we've got a couple of guys here that I really admire. First one to my right is Danny Zaslavsky. Danny is the co-founder of VendQ, managing partner of VendQ, and he's my boss, so I have to say nice things about him. But even more exciting is we're being joined by Matt Watson. Matt has founded Vend Solutions, Full Scale, Stackify. Matt, we're so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I don't know if you know the story, but Matt and I have known each other for 25 years or so.
Yeah, almost something like that. Yeah, long time.
I mean, him and I got to talk about this the other day, but he stopped by NADA and I didn't even know he was going to be there because I thought he got out of automotive a while ago, but here he was walking the show floor and he comes up and like I'm in the middle of like, you know, trying to demonstrate software and there's like people around and there comes Matt and literally like I felt like the room stopped. I'm like, what's up, man? So it was really cool getting to connect with him. But him and I met originally because my dad bought our first computer from him.
Wait, this is the Matt that you always talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is exciting.
So Matt worked at Sears on Metcalf here in Kansas City and Josh, my dad's business partner, tried to convince my dad that we needed a computer, and my dad kind of fought it until he was convinced to go buy one, and Matt was the guy who sold us our very first computer. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy, but it's also amazing when you think about all the things Matt has done since selling you that first computer.
Yeah. Yeah, and probably the funniest part of that story is I was supposed to be at lunch. I wasn't even supposed to be selling computers at the time. Yeah,
you guys were destined to meet because look at that chain of events that you did not go to lunch. Look at what it led to.
So I want to share a little bit of that story, and then I want to get into really talking about you, Matt, because for those that are listening that don't know, you know, kind of like how did this entrepreneurial spirit begin? For me, I remember when you came to the car dealership because my dad convinced you somehow. To come and install this darn computer for us and show us how to use it. And then Josh convinced you to help us build some software because we were still, you know, press hard three copies with our bill of sales and we were trying to figure out how do we be a little bit more efficient. Here's Matt walking around our dealership and seeing that syndication didn't exist at the time. There was no way for us to actually put our vehicles online in a centralized way. We'd have to go to literally every single website. And if we wanted to change a price, we'd have to do it all these different places. And Matt saw a problem that he could solve.
Well, I think that was the entrepreneurial spirit, right? It's just, you know, being open to opportunities, looking for opportunities, looking for problems, and just trying to help people solve them. And then figuring out how to, you know, make a business out of it and monetize it was almost secondary, right? It's like, your dad comes in, needs a computer, needs help installing it. I'm like, all right, whatever. I can help you with that, right? Like, I need to send photos of cars and prices on the internet. Okay, whatever. Maybe I can help you with that. Or it's just, you know, opportunity, right? Just trying to help other people at the end of the day.
So, Matt, did you, as you were growing up, did you know that you wanted to program? Because I know you went to DeVry, right, here in Kansas City. And when you were going there, were you like, man, I'm going to build a software company one day?
Well, so when I was younger, my dad actually went to some sort of computer programming school And the sad part is, whatever the school was, it was kind of a weird, like, third tier school. It wasn't like some big name thing. It went out of business right when he got to the end of his education he was going to, and so he never actually got to do it, but he wanted to do it. And when I was younger, you know, I always worked on computers, did stuff with computers, had an old Commodore 64, and then when I was about 13, I got turned on to the internet through dial-up modems. It had a 300 baud modem that, you know, like downloading one letter at a time, you know, on a website, right? It was like horrible, but that was cutting edge back then. And I started playing all text-based games, which were called MUD games. And I ended up finding other people who wrote scripts to, you know, play the game basically while I was at school and while I was asleep. And so the first computer program I ever did was like modifying those scripts. Like you run around a dungeon, kill a monster, pick up the gold, rest, and go find the next monster, like that kind of thing, right? But that was a long time ago. That was the first computer programming I ever did. And I think between that and my dad had kind of wanted to do it. I loved computers. You know, I was all in on doing computer programming in high school and wanted to go do it. I always thought it was, you know, something that would be great for me.
You still have that game somewhere?
No, it's an online game. I'm sure it's still available, actually.
That's funny. So, okay. So then, but that was before you went to DeVry to actually get some like formal education around programming.
Yeah. And I think I was only at DeVry for like 6 months or 12 months before I met like your dad, and then started writing the software for the dealership. So when I started writing rewriting the software you guys had at the dealership, that was in Visual Basic 6. And this was in like the year 2000, I think.
Yeah.
I had no idea what I was doing. I'd kind of dabbled with it before, but just kind of figured it all out. It was all very self-taught. I had taken a couple classes at DeVry, but they weren't in Visual Basic. And fast forward like a couple years later, when I actually took the Visual Basic class at DeVry, I knew way more about it than the teacher did.
Mm-hmm.
And
you had people giving you pressure to say, hey, solve this problem.
Well, and part of the problem was the teachers there, you know, they used to be old COBOL teachers or something. And now they're like, well, teach Visual Basic 6 to these kids. And they didn't know very well. But I learned a ton from working, you know, with you guys in building that software. Between that and my other like first full like real job that I had, really completely changed my career, because even with you guys, I was forced to talk to the customer and who the user was from day one. Where most software developers, they work at some big company hidden in a cubicle somewhere that never actually talks to the customer. Where here I am talking to, you know, you, your dad, Josh, all these guys from day one, like, hey, what does the software need to do? How are we going to make it do that? Like, I was forced to think that way from the first day, where most people don't get a lot of that experience in their career.
Yeah, so for those listening, if we haven't said it yet, Matt founded Vin Solutions, began as Vin Stickers.
Yep.
Right. That was the original name. And then, just like us with Dealer Q and now VinQ, evolved into Vin Solutions. And Vin Solutions for us, was revolutionary because we didn't have a way to manage our inventory in a centralized place. We didn't have a way to match them to customers. CRMs really didn't exist in automotive at the time. And, really, it was a place to measure ROI, like marketing ROI, because all these leads started coming in, and that was a new frontier. How did you even like come up with the idea that you're like, this was a need we needed to solve for? I guess two questions. How did you know that this was a need that the entire auto industry needed? And then how did you just like imagine that this is going to be a huge company one day? Or was it just one step at a time and it just grew organically?
Well, it definitely grew organically one step at a time. And, you know, early on, we were doing just the inventory management part of it that you guys used. And we provided some services where we would go around to the dealerships and take photos for them. And then eventually we decided we wanted to focus more on the software, and we got out of that like service part of it. So we only had the software, and we were providing websites for car dealers. But I have to credit some of this to my business partner, Mike DeLay, who kind of came along, I think it was around 2007. He was one of our customers actually at Heartland Chevrolet. And he had been doing some consulting around another CRM product that was in the market. That was a pretty good CRM product that was kind of more cutting edge. And he's like, Matt, you should build this same kind of functionality in the Vin Solutions. And for us, it was a great next progression because it was, you know, we could take all the inventory and we could put it online and syndicate the data. We could build websites for the dealers, but we didn't have anything to help with the leads. Like, once you got a lead, what do you do with the lead? And at the time, in 2007, most of the CRM systems that exist didn't handle email very well. Like, email marketing and everything to do with email was still very kind of cutting edge. And like Reynolds and Reynolds CRM at that time, if you wanted to send an email with HTML, you had to know how to type HTML. It wasn't like, you know, editors today that, you know, highlight text, make it bold. Like, none of that existed. You had to know the HTML. So it started out as a simple idea. It's like, okay, you got a lead from Auto Trader. How do I email the customer like pictures of the car?
Right.
Right. Like, just basic stuff that at that time, the CRM systems weren't designed for. And older CRM systems in automotive were really built more around sales follow-up and service follow-up. They were really designed to send like email and print mail, right? Like postcards and paper reminders and all that about service reminders and all that kind of stuff. And they really were not very good at handling internet leads. And so we had kind of just grabbed onto that. So, okay, how do we make the best product for handling internet leads? And that's ultimately why we were successful, is we were one of the best products for that.
Isn't that wild?
It's crazy to imagine how far we've come in so little time. I mean, like how far behind the car industry was, but the internet became available to the masses, you know, in the late 90s,
yeah,
early 2000s. It
really hasn't
been around that long.
Well, we grew up through this. So, you know, actually when you stop and think about it, when we first started Vend Solutions, it was 2003. And to put it in perspective, when his dad came in to buy a computer, the only digital cameras we sold cost like $1,000 and had 3.5-inch floppies and stuff, right? Like, all that was totally new when they came in to buy that computer around 2000, 2001, whatever it was. 2003, when we started the company, it wasn't that much different. Remember, the iPhone and Android did not even come out until 2006. And even when that came out, the camera quality was god awful, right? Like, nobody wanted to take pictures of their cars and upload them with that because the picture quality was awful. So, you know, we grew up in that time frame of this. And I know, Danny, we always joke about your dealership, about how they became famous from Auto Trader magazine, from, you know, Josh waving and all that kind of stuff. When we started, Auto Trader magazine was huge and autotrader.com was free. The listings were free. 8 years later, when we sold the company, Auto Trader magazine was gone and autotrader.com acquired us, was doing like $1 billion a year in revenue and online classifieds. So we existed in that time frame when that entire shift happened.
Isn't that incredible?
That's incredible.
And so you can imagine all of those listings were generating all this traffic, and all that traffic needed to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I remember transitioning from essentially getting, you know, 50 emails a day to actually having a CRM, and actually having a system that I could like send back a customer information, and I can create a template so I can standardize the way that we communicate. But all of this was so new to all of us. And I mean, huge kudos to Matt. You can see the way he thinks, solve the problem, get on the front line and solve the problem, which, I want to touch on a little bit more in a moment. So, okay, so you help build Vend Solutions, you and Mike DeLay. What role did you play during that time in building the company?
So I was always the product guy. You know, DeLay was great at product ideas, and he talked about like CRM and building CRM and kind of helped push us to do that. He was definitely, you know, also kind of very visionary and how automotive should work. And he went on and worked at Auto Alert and Pro Max and all these other things. Very smart guy, very gifted. You know, him and I worked together very well. You know, I was more the CTO and building the software, architecting the software, all that kind of stuff. You know, and him and I worked really well together on, you know, visioning like, okay, what should the product do? And then I could go do it. And that marriage worked really well, just like a dealer queue. You know, you got you and Chris working together in a team, right? You get the right people together. It, you know, magic happens.
So what would you say were the biggest challenges over the time that you guys were building that company? What's like, I know for us, you know, there's always so many opportunities coming at us, and some of those opportunities can turn into distractions sometimes. But then also, I mean, there are real challenges every single day with how fast automotive is changing. What were some of the challenges that were you felt like were big for you guys during that time?
Well, there were a few of them. And the first one was capital. So we were a bootstrap company. We never raised any money. Around 2008, 2009, not a good time to raise capital in automotive. Chrysler goes bankrupt. GM goes bankrupt. Ford closes 1,000 stores, whatever. We wanted to raise money. We were growing very, very fast. You know, as we were one of the leading like CRM companies, we were like doubling in size year over year, like growing phenomenally. But during that economy and recession, especially with automotive kind of being a turmoil from the bankruptcies, nobody would invest. So we couldn't raise money, even though we wanted to raise money. So because of that, it made it very difficult for us to operate as a company, because we were always like robbing Peter to pay Paul. Like, we financed the business by not paying our bills, right? Like, we didn't pay our vendors until whichever one of them screamed the loudest, and then we would pay them and not pay somebody else. Like, we were making money, but we were, you know, right on the razor edge of, you know, cash flow. Like, we didn't have working capital. We didn't have investment. So between that and the recession, those are two of the big problems. But the recession actually helped us, because, you know, take somebody like your dealership, like, hey, we'll spend $50,000 a month on radio and TV and magazine, print, all this. They're like, oh, we're not going to do any of that anymore. But now we're going to spend it on autotrader.com, cars.com, our website. We were perfectly positioned when that transition happened. So all the dealers moved more to digital retailing, and we were there at the right place at the right time.
Well said. I remember that transition, and I remember how much it was, truly omnichannel, because like there was my parents who were looking at certain media, and then there was my generation that was looking at different media, and I needed that guidance to understand how do I still get the audience I need to sell cars. And you guys did a really nice job of ushering in a new era of leaders in automotive. So kudos to you guys on that.
Yeah, I remember getting the Sunday paper, right? And you'd have the cars.com section and the dealers that spend all the money on that, right? Like, that all dried up. It's all gone. But all that money moved.
So I was Kansas City Star. Okay. And this actually, I don't know that I've ever told you this. So we were sending these files called ADP files. And ADP stands for, or I'm sorry, ADF files, excuse me. ADF stands for auto dealer format. And we were sending does ADF files still exist in automotive, or is everything now APIs?
I probably still exist, I'm sure.
So we were sending these ADF files to the Kansas City Star, because we would buy a full page and I would have cars at the top, and then I would have literally year, make, model, price on the bottom of my entire inventory. And I was like, yeah, these work. We're going to sell a bunch of cars. And eventually I was like, I don't even know if this works anymore. So there was a mistake that was made one weekend when we accidentally sent them all of our costs instead of...
Oh, no.
Right? So I'm like, well, I guess we're going to find out if this works. So we literally posted on a interior page of Kansas City Star the cost of every one of our vehicles. We didn't sell a single car from that. Wow. You could imagine Monday morning we canceled with Kansas City Star. And moved our spend to Auto Trader.
That's a funny story. I love that. But that goes to prove the point, right? All that money shifted to digital. And that's why companies like Vin Solutions and DealerQ, right, are so much more important today than back then when everything was print.
Yep. So Matt, you sold the company in 2012?
May of 2011.
11. Yeah. So sold to Cox Automotive, and since has gone on to build two really cool companies that I'm going to ask you about in a moment. During that time, you know, I was still growing up in the car dealership, and I remember the day Matt sold the company, and I messaged him a couple weeks later. I'm like, I want to hear all of this. So he pulls up in his cool car and picks me up. He goes, where do you want to go eat? I go, I don't know. So he took me to Applebee's. I don't know if you remember that. I expected something a little fancier, but it's fine. There was a seed inside of me that I had always kind of bounced back and forth with Matt, because I would show up while he owned Vin Solutions to their offices and like sit there and work on ads. And they ran our website for the longest time and all these different things. And I always had this bug for innovation. And so roughly 2015, 2016, Matt and I started going to like breakfast and pinging ideas back and forth. And he's the guy who actually introduced me to Chris Oak.
Very cool.
Who is my business partner today, which Chris was a developer at Vin Solutions at the time, right?
Yeah, him and Brian Kellogg both. And Brian Kellogg is actually one of my favorite people in this story.
Tell me more, because he's sitting about, 20 feet that way right now.
Yeah, my favorite part about Brian is he started at Vin Solutions as one of the support people and then worked his way up through the development team, right? Becoming, you know, ever more important and ever more experienced and skilled at automotive industry and software development, all that, and then left to, you know, be one of the founders at BenQ. So it's just so cool for me to see like his progression all the way through from just basic support, you know, entry level position all the way up to startup founder, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, I agree. And I absolutely love working with him. And I want to take this moment to say, I mean, you mentioned this earlier, when partnerships work, they really work. And it's because they're based in trust, they're based in a common vision to grow and to take risks. And I am so lucky that you introduced me to Chris and to Brian and to Jeff, because these guys I will go to battle with any day. So it's been really cool. So then you were like, okay, I sold the company, but I'm not done. Like, what was that transition like?
Well, I was 29 years old. What do you do at 29 years old after you sell a company and could retire? Like, I can't golf all day, and I would kill my wife if I was at home all day with her. Like, I got to do something, right? So, yeah, I immediately went and started another company. And part of me wishes I would have stayed in automotive. I should have joined the dealer queue, VinQ team, I guess. But instead, went and did something else. Was a company called Stackify.
And Stackify, I heard about it on NPR. I read about it in the Business Journal. I mean, you guys changed the way that developers organize code, right?
So it was really to track performance. So just think about VinQ today, right? If your customers call and say, okay, VinQ is slow, why isn't the software working the right way? It has these problems, these errors, all this kind of stuff. It was software that tracked all of that. So we could tell you it's this database query is slow, or this third party like web service that the software uses isn't working the right way. So it's super valuable to software developers. It's like very kind of nerdy product for developers. But the challenge with it was like extremely hard to sell. Like selling to software developers is very hard and very, very different than trying to sell to car dealers for sure.
Yeah. But how did you come up with the idea? Was it your time at Vin Solutions and you said, man, I wish I had something to solve the problem?
Yeah, again, I was trying to solve my own problems. Like at Vin, of course, we were a high growth, kind of bigger scale company, right? And we did not have the tools we needed to properly monitor performance or troubleshoot, you know, software issues, any of that kind of stuff. So I was really trying to build tools to do that. And when we did it, there weren't a lot of tools out there, but we quickly ran into competition from some like huge VC funded, publicly traded companies. It was brutal trying to compete with all those companies, but we were successful. We had our little piece of the pie and then eventually sold that in 2021.
Second exit, sold that company. But during that time, I remember hearing that, I guess that wasn't enough of a challenge for you. So you started full scale while you also had Stackify.
Yeah, so I needed to hire software developers. I needed to hire about 10 of them. And there was no way I could afford to hire all 10 of them here in Kansas City, let alone find 10 software developers. That's even just as hard. And so my friend Matt DeCourcy had some developers in the Philippines and said, hey, Matt, you should hire developers there. They're really smart. They're the nicest people in the world. They speak perfect English. Like, it's a great place to hire software developers. And so I went over there, met people. He had already had a couple developers and decided to give it a go. And it started as actually an accidental business. It's like I needed developers and I set up as a partnership with him. And then next thing I knew, we hired 100 people over the next 12 months, hired 100 people in the Philippines doing software development from, you know, people like you guys, people that I knew. They're like, hey, if this works for you, Matt, then, you know, probably would work for us. We'd love to take advantage of this. And so it just kind of grew as an accidental business. And then today we have 300 employees.
So that's huge. So what you basically did, full scale means you can scale your business with a developer?
Yeah.
So you just outsource developers? Is that essentially?
Yeah, we're trying to help companies scale. It's like they need to hire software developers, they need to scale, and that was the goal.
That's really cool. So I want to ask you some questions that I think would be speaking to like maybe a younger version of yourself or a younger version of myself when you don't know what the future holds. You don't know if you're going to be successful. Frankly, I still don't know, but we're sure trying.
I was going to say, we still don't know.
We still don't know. But really, you know, before you really kind of know how to play the game and know how, where all the puzzle pieces fit, like what would you tell somebody who has an idea, but doesn't know, you know, where to start?
I think the key is validating the idea. I mean, there are lots of ideas and people always talk about, you know, it comes down to execution and not the idea. The idea is not worth anything. And I think that's somewhat true, but it's more about validating the idea and more than anything, knowing how to sell the product. If you don't know how to sell the product, you're nodding because you're like, I work in marketing. I get it. Yes. If you don't know how to sell the product, none of the rest of it matters, right? Like you can build the best product in the world, but if you don't have the go-to-market strategy that works, for a lot of companies, the go-to-market strategy is actually the secret sauce. I know a lot of people, especially if you're software developers, you don't want to hear that. You're like, well, I built this cool thing. Yeah, but if you don't know how to sell it, it doesn't matter. But a lot of times the go-to-market strategy is the secret sauce and the value of a lot of companies.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know that well. So then what about this idea of like gold plating? So like I built something, but I want to keep making it better, right? Like I'm not ready. Like I just need another layer of gold before I can really get out there.
Well, so in an early stage company, that's kind of the death, right? You're like the wizard behind the curtain and you don't want to go sell it. You don't want to get feedback. You're going to be embarrassed by it, whatever it is. That's definitely a problem. You got to spend more time talking to customers, getting feedback, getting validation, figure out how am I going to sell this thing. But even as a bigger company, it's a problem. Like at Vin Solutions, we kept adding features and, you know, VinQ, you guys keep adding. We had more products, more features. We kind of have a platform. We keep adding new things. And to some degree, and at some point, it creates more and more complexity. Like the problem we had at Vin, there was not a single person in the company, including me or Brian Kellogg, that knew how the whole thing worked anymore. It became so big and so many different features and functions, levers and switches, that nobody knew what if I pull this lever, what's going to happen. And that's a problem with software. And I had that problem with Stackify. That was part of our problem with Stackify. If I would have just done like one thing instead of trying to do five things, we'd have been more successful. And I'm definitely at this point a fan of simplicity. I like businesses that are simple and scalable, and trying to avoid that gold plating and trying to overly make things complex. It's always a struggle. It's always a battle. If I can plug for a second, I also host a podcast called Startup Hustle. And the gentleman I introduced today is also from Kansas City. His name is Bo Lace. He's the founder of Lula. And we were talking about this today. The whole episode was about how it's like he started as a B2C company and they pivoted to B2B. So went from selling to consumers to business. And he had to make the hard decision to like give up like a big part of his company and his revenue so he could go focus on a different part of it. And as an entrepreneur, I think that's one of our hardest struggles is like we want everything. We want to do it all, right? But I think the key lesson after doing this for so long, I'm sure you can appreciate it, like, really what we want to do is kind of simplify it down and then scale the part that really works.
Be a weapon is what we say here internally is, the end of the sword, the sharpest part is our goal. So, we're near the end. Matt, I can't thank you enough, for being with us today. For those listening that have an idea, because I know there's a lot more of us, like me, who have ideas but can't actually code, and less of you who can do both. So for those people out there that have an idea and they're going to go out and validate it, but now it's time to build it, how do they reach you and how do they work with Fullscale to actually see their idea come to life?
Yeah, so you can check us out at fullscale.io. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can look for Matt Watson. I also have a blog. It's a newsletter, visionaryCTO.com, podcast as a Startup Hustle. So anywhere you find me, any of those places, you can always reach out. But those are ways you can follow me for different things too.
That's awesome. Matt, thank you so much.
Danny, thank you. Matt, thank you. This was so much fun. And I'm actually looking forward to replaying this podcast and hearing it again, because I think it was so fun and informative. So thank you both very much. Really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you so much.
All right, see you.